The last case on the clerk's oral calendar this morning is Lifetime versus Zurich Insurance. We're ready for arguments. Would each attorney who presents arguments introduce his or herself before beginning?
Yeah. Good morning. Brian Freeman on behalf of the Lifetime Appellants. With me is Erica Holzer and Eric Winseth from Lifetime.
Okay. And who's going to be arguing?
I will be arguing.
Excellent. And who's arguing for respondent?
Good morning, Your Honor. Patrick Hofer, Washington, D.C., arguing for Zurich.
Thank you. We're ready for arguments then from Mr. Freeman on behalf of Lifetime.
May it please the court.
Do you need to adjust the podium?
Please
do.
Maybe you should.
We want to be able to hear you.
Okay. May it please the court. Nearly every business in America had COVID-19 related losses, but Lifetime was different. Lifetime bought unique and express interruption by communicable disease insurance coverage. It did so for its 150 insured locations in 29 states around the country. And when catastrophe struck in 2020, Lifetime suffered massive business interruption losses as various governments around the country issued orders suspending operations at Lifetime's clubs. The amount of ICD coverage, that's the issue in this case, the de novo issue in this case, was promised to Lifetime on a per occurrence basis, up to $1 million per occurrence. The plain language of the general occurrence definition in the policy refers to all losses attributable directly or indirectly to one cause or a series of similar or related causes, plural. And the ICD endorsement's plain language uses that same structure, beginning with loss, gross earnings loss, resulting from the necessary suspension of the insured's business activities if caused by a governmental order. Again, the same structure as we find in the occurrence definition, loss, cause, we find in the ICD endorsement. The ICD endorsement, at its core, our position is the ICD endorsement tells us the cause that matters for purposes of the occurrence definition. And the cause are government orders.
So let's just take that argument for what it is. I know that Zurich disagrees with that, right, as what we look to for the cause. Let's even take your argument that the cause was the order or orders, okay? Why then were the orders across many states not a series of similar or related causes?
Right. So, and as I understand the question is why aren't orders from different jurisdictions together a series? And I think about the Timberwolves last night. They beat the Golden State Warriors. They won the series 4-1. There's also another series last night played, the Knicks and the Celtics. That series will continue. Two separate series, two separate sets of players, coaches, separate locations. In our view, just like the government orders, the series of government orders from Governor Walz, who issued a shutdown order and renewed it serially, even see the numbering sequentially increase in these orders. Same thing in New York. We have a New York series. So in our view, under the plain meaning of series, you have two separate series. But there's another reason I think Zurich's argument does not work with respect to all of the orders grouped together as a series. And it's that the definition of occurrence starts with losses. The very first phrase in the definition of occurrence is all losses. Okay, that's the reference point for causation. So all of Lifetime's losses would have to be caused by all of the governmental orders. That's not what happened. That doesn't make any sense. Lifetime's losses for its 24 Minnesota health and fitness clubs were not caused by the orders from Governor Cuomo in New York. and you could go on the line. So there's really two reasons.
So let me just see if I track that, because I want to make sure I'm understanding the point. The language says all losses attributable directly or indirectly to one cause or a series. So why wouldn't all losses attributable to a series account for those losses that are associated with each part of the series?
I think it's too blunt of a reading of the plain language. The law, and let's start with loss and how the policy and the endorsement deal with loss. Everybody agrees that word loss refers to the ICD losses, the covered ICD losses. Okay, those are on an insured location basis. That's the language in the ICD endorsement. So we will pay for gross earnings loss at an insured location. So the losses are location specific. So when we read the definition of occurrence, and we read all losses, we've got to ask whether the losses at issue for an insured location are actually caused or in the language of the occurrence definition attributable to this group of orders. Well, they're not attributable to the entire group of the orders. They're only attributable to a subset of all of the orders, the jurisdictionally specific orders that were issued. In our view, jurisdictionally independent orders cannot be in series together. And dental experts is a federal decision from the Northern District of Illinois held just that. So no reasonable fact finder could conclude that the orders from one governor caused the losses were causally related to the orders of another governor. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I guess that's where I'm trying to understand the difference in language is that it says similar or related. So related, I get your, and we look to the American Commerce, we can see that there is some kind of logic or causal connection with related. But then this has additional words similar. And so I'm trying to kind of parse out why aren't these, there, you would maybe take away the word series. I think that now everything hangs on what a series is, but you would agree that they're similar orders, right?
We can't dispute that they're, right. At least some of them are similar.
Yeah, so
I mean, they're different.
Within a couple of weeks, they had various kinds of orders, but that the orders were similar that a certain amount of time and that they did cause fitness facilities to have to shut down, regardless of what their language was, right? So the question is really like series then, and
on the term series, I would take the court back to Minnesota's insurance ambiguity rule. The Minnesota Supreme Court and the Minnesota appellate courts have been applying that rule for 100 years. And the notion is that the insurance company holds the pen, and thus, if there's ambiguity in the policy language, the risk falls to the insurance company. Here, there are 76, maybe it's 74, specific definitions, words, that Zurich took out of the contract and defined specifically. In the definition of occurrence, the last sentence of that even says, if we specifically define occurrence as corresponding to a coverage, we look to that definition. They didn't do that. They didn't define cause. They didn't define series. And in our view, Your Honors, Lifetime's position is at minimum reasonable, and therefore we win. That's the operative precedential rule or import of Minnesota's ambiguity.
But you also have, I mean, American Commerce was dealing with this kind of ambiguity argument with related to, I mean, that the idea that, well, that the phrasing there was ambiguous and the court said, well, just because they're broad words doesn't make them ambiguous.
Agreed. That is what American Commerce said on the word related. I think the dental expert's case in contrast held that related meant causally. I understand the court's bound by American Commerce. I think a reasonable reading of related is just what dental experts held. I want to make comment on American Commerce because I think it's a really important case. I think it's the closest case of any case cited by any party, and it's issued by the Minnesota Supreme Court. And American Commerce decided the number of occurrences issue under a first-party insurance policy. In contrasted to a liability policy, right? This is a first-party insurance contract. That was the context of American Commerce. It decided the number of occurrences issue. And the court rejected a cause test. It specifically rejected a cause test and found it to be unduly restrictive. The district court here applied a cause test. Those two things are incompatible. It was legal error, respectfully, for the district court to apply a cause test when American Commerce is on point for this insurance issue and said, we do not apply a cause test. Those two things cannot be reconciled, and that was the starting point of the court's legal analysis, which led to the erroneous result, in our view. I want to say one more thing about American Commerce. This is into the weeds of that case, but I think it's important. The American Commerce decision actually considered a cause test, and they cited to a Tenth Circuit case, like Business Industries or something like that. And they said, if we applied that test, the cause test, which is the test that our district court applied, we would get to a result of one occurrence, right? They said we had one fraudster, one embezzling employee who engaged in all of these different acts of embezzlement. And so if we applied the cause test, we would get to one occurrence because we had one employee. And Justice Anderson said that is unduly restrictive. We are not going to follow that. So here, and what happened in American Commerce? The court said, even though it was the same employee, two occurrences. Here we've got multiple independent, jurisdictionally independent actors issuing governmental orders based on the circumstances within their states. This is a multiple occurrence case under the law and under American Commerce. I want to speak to a few other ways that we believe the district court erred.
Can I interrupt? I have one other just question to make sure I'm fully understanding your position now as opposed to what you were arguing in the district court. So my understanding is that there were some, maybe earlier on in the case, that there was an argument about seeking relief on each location. It seems like that's no longer at issue, that now we're just focused on the orders. And I thought in footnote maybe 7 of your brief, you had said that series, and maybe this goes to the theater Count Basie case, a series of government orders in the same jurisdiction, would you agree that those are one occurrence? Or where, because then I look at your chart, you have 41, and that, so what is an occurrence here under your theory,
yes.
Just so I fully understand
yes.
That?
So to answer your first question, we have pursued a narrow one-issue appeal, which is the number of occurrences issue. That's what's before the court, 100%. On the question about how do we get to 41 occurrences, our view is that each set of orders which caused a consecutive day suspension of operations or shutdown, each unique set of orders caused ICD loss and is a separate occurrence. So for Minnesota, for example, Governor Walz issued an order on March 16th. He lifted the order in June. And remember, the third paragraph of the ICD endorsement refers to you have to have consecutive days of closure. And so we had one consecutive day period, one set of ICD losses, the first phrase in the definition of occurrence. And then we got to November, we probably all remember this, and the holidays were coming, Thanksgiving was coming, and Governor Walz said, we're going to shut down again. And for 30 days, a second consecutive period, we had a second set of ICD losses caused by a unique set or series of governmental orders. So in our view, that's how we get beyond 29 occurrences for 29 states.
So when you were describing the idea of series earlier, you were saying kind of a temporal, like one after the other, after like a Twins game concludes, and you go home, and then you come back a day or two later, right? So why wouldn't it be the same series of the first order, then we all open up and go out, and then we like close down again? And under your definition, why wouldn't that be a series?
I think in our view it follows from the plain language of the endorsement, because of the definition of occurrence, because that definition starts with losses. It's speaking to the losses attributable to one cause or a series of related causes. and you have separate losses caused by separate series of orders. And again, I'd point the court back to the consecutive day concept in the plain language of the endorsement itself. I've got about 50 seconds. I wanted to make one point on error of the district court, in our view, and it's that American Commerce specifically said, in rejecting the cause test, we apply a multi-factor test. And one of the factors the court in American Commerce identified is the geographic and temporal separation of the losses. That is binding precedent. The district court did not give any weight to that, found it unimportant. We also have the same concept reflected in Domtar, which is a Minnesota Court of Appeals case. So this is the only two occurrence issues cited by any party from any of the Minnesota appellate courts, both of which identify this factor as important, and it was not applied by the district court. And here, I see my time is out, I'll finish my comment. Here we have that geographic and temporal separation in spades because we have wildly different interruption periods. Oklahoma was reopened by May. In states like Michigan and New Jersey, it was 177 days later in September.
I can see where the reopening date goes to the amount of losses, which here would be over the cap anyway, but I don't think that helps assess the causation part. Why is it relevant how long they were open or exactly what the wording was? The question is, did it cause your client to close?
So I would disagree with that in this sense. We're focused on the losses, and you cannot have a gross earnings loss, an interruption loss, under the policy without a start and an end. It's only when you have two orders together, the closure and the reopening orders, that a loss is caused and complete. And so I think it's perfectly appropriate to look to both orders, which brings in the temporal separation. And then, of course, we have geographic separation. We've got clubs in Washington State, in Florida, in Massachusetts, and in Arizona. So my point is merely, again, we have clear precedential guidance from the American Commerce, not applied, not given weight by the district court.
So you have no loss unless there's a closure.
The term is suspension, and suspension is defined in the policy as cessation of normal business activities.
Okay.
Here, I'm not sure it matters because all of the orders closed the clubs.
Did any clubs remain open across the states?
No.
Okay.
I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal unless there are more questions.
Good morning once again, Your Honors. Patrick Hofer for Respondent Zurich. May it please the court. To begin, I believe it is useful to start with many points that we agree on. While Lifetime argued in the district court that the ICD limit applied per location, the district court held that that argument was unconvincing and quoted the clear policy language as said that the limits applied per an occurrence, quote, regardless of the number of locations involved. Now on appeal, Lifetime abandons that argument, and so we all agree that the ICD limit applies per occurrence, regardless of the number of locations involved. We also agree that the ICD limit, interruption by communicable disease limit, is $1 million. We agree that in determining the number of occurrences under Minnesota law, Minnesota cases look first to the policy language. We agree on that. We agree that for the policy language here, the definition of occurrence looks to the number of causes. It says all loss or damage attributable directly or indirectly to one cause. We all agree that the government orders have in common one cause, that is the threat of the spread of COVID-19. Lifetime had to demonstrate that cause in order to get coverage in the first place. We all agree that is the cause of all the government orders.
But without the order, there's no recovery.
And that's another element of recovery, yes. So as the district court noted, there's a confluence of events that need to be shown, starting with the threat of a communicable disease and then a government order prohibiting access due to that threat. And without all of those elements, there is no coverage.
Well, it seems like the endorsement's written kind of in the opposite of, the flip of that, which is that they'll pay for losses caused by an order.
And the order has
and
to
the
have
order a... that says it's due to threat of spread of communicable disease. But isn't the order the operative cause?
We have to have an order, no question, prohibiting access to the location. But the order has to have a covered cause, and that's right there in the coverage provision. The order has to be entered due to the threat of the spread of communicable disease. Otherwise, this interruption by communicable disease provision doesn't apply. So, yes, there are these two elements of causation, caused by a government order due to the threat of the spread of communicable disease. Both have to be demonstrated. And the question here is, for number of occurrences, we look to the occurrence definition, which says all loss or damage attributable directly or indirectly to one cause. And what Lifetime would like to do in making its argument is that it wants to get around the conclusion that there was one single cause of all of the government orders here, which is that threat of the spread of disease. Now, it relies on the backup argument it made in the district court that each government order should be treated as a separate occurrence, in some cases, some states, two occurrences per jurisdiction. But the only way Lifetime can make that argument is by asking the court to shut its eyes to the fact that all the government orders had the same single cause, that all of these government orders have no causal relationship at all, that they're independent and separate, that they have no causal connection or relationship. And, of course, that defies logic and common sense.
Well, why doesn't that? So, I mean, going back to my question earlier, why doesn't that go to more to the question of whether there's a series of similar or related causes as opposed to, because I do read, I mean, American Commerce has that language where it says we're not going to look at just the fact that this was one employee doing embezzlement, that there were two different, especially in that case, it was about, you know, the method was really the distinguishing factor of the occurrences. So we, you know, in that case, at least we're not looking at the underlying, you know, rogue employee cause as opposed to here virus cause.
Correct.
We look to something a little bit more.
Well, so in analytically, we don't even need to get to the series question because the occurrence definition starts with the proposition that if all loss or damage is attributable directly or indirectly to a single cause, we're done. If it's one cause that that all loss is attributable to, either with direct causation or indirect causation, is one occurrence, or a series of similar related causes. So before we even get to the series question, a necessary question to answer, are all of these orders, are all of these losses due to a single cause, directly or indirectly? The answer is yes. And we know that not just from just reading that occurrence definition, we know that from the Minnesota cases, the cases applying Minnesota law. Let's start with Northern States Power, where the Supreme Court held that there was one occurrence for contamination of a site over many years and the property damage that happened after all the releases had occurred. The court looked to the Uniroyal case from the Eastern District of New York and applied the occurrence analysis and said there was one occurrence for all of that property damage. And we look at H.B. Fuller, where Judge Tonheim applied Northern States Power and Uniroyal, said there was one occurrence for all of the asbestos products involved. And also in the 3M case, which also Judge Tonheim applied Minnesota law, Northern States, and Uniroyal, in that case involving surgical blankets, also one occurrence. The
Counsel, let me go back. You were citing a lot of cases, and we're familiar with the cases, but the language again, the suspension of business activities, suspension is caused by order. Now, if it's a business interruption insurance, or at least that portion of it, and you close because of the underlying cause of COVID, and then you reopen, and you close again months later, and you reopen. Yes, the underlying cause is COVID, but each of those is caused by a court order, correct?
I'm sorry, it's caused by what?
Court order. I mean, excuse me, a government
order. Government
in this case, gubernatorial order, an order from the government.
And what is the cause of the government order? And we have to answer that question, because if we don't know the answer to that question, there's no coverage. It has to be answered with the answer, the threat of the spread of communicable disease.
Well, and it's caused by the order and the threat of disease.
Right. And since there's one disease...
But the threat may have receded, or so we thought. And the order is rescinded, and then it's put into effect later again because the threat of disease has become more clear that it's not over with yet. So why, under the cause by order, isn't that more than one occurrence?
Because all of the orders, whether all of the states or all subdivisions of all the states, whether at once or later, were all due to the same cause, due to the same threat of the spread of a single disease.
Well, I mean, okay. How do you parse a pandemic? Like what the threat is? I mean, early on it was one thing. The second closures were like Delta variant. Is that the same threat?
The same virus. Yes, the same disease. Yes, it's
and
all.
And are we still under that threat?
At a minimum, Your Honor, then we get to the series question. Because, yes, all of these orders are a series of similar or related causes. And so, one of the lessons from American commerce is it's not appropriate to micro-distinguish the causes. That's the word the Supreme Court used in that case. In fact, American commerce, I think, more strongly supports Zurich in this case than it supports Lifetime. But it eschewed the temptation to over micro-distinguish is the word it used.
Well, yeah, you don't look at how she wrote the checks here versus there. But
correct.
Okay.
And specifically it rejected an argument that Lifetime makes here. I think it's very important. If nothing else, if I'm able to get across to the court only one point today, is to look at the American commerce holding with respect to its rejection of the Massachusetts decision in Slater. In Slater, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court said, well, it wasn't the scheme of embezzlements that caused the loss, it was each individual embezzlement. And the Minnesota Supreme Court said, we reject that holding as unreasonable. We're not going to go down to that granular level because it's, you know, if it's a series, if it's all due to one cause, we're going to look at the commonality that joins them all together. And that's exactly the argument that Lifetime makes here when it relies on dental experts. It says it wasn't the pandemic that caused its loss, it was each government order. Well, American commerce says you don't look at the last event in the causal chain to determine whether there's a single cause. You look at the precipitating event. You look like the Lipschultz case. You look at what is the cause that brings them all together. American commerce rejects Lifetime's theory that you look at the last event. In fact, what the district court says, you look at the precipitating event, the first event in the causal chain. That brings them all together. That is the occurrence.
American commerce seems to say something kind of in the middle, which is look at the facts of the case and the different situations and how do you read it and look at, you know. So in that world where it doesn't, I don't read it as saying you look at the original cause, which it doesn't, right? It doesn't look at the employee, employee. It doesn't look at the end.
Well, what did it rejected 150 occurrences. It rejected 7 occurrences. It said there were two different modes of embezzlement, two different causes. Here there's only one cause. There's only one precipitating event that led to all the government orders. I think American commerce compels, on a causation analysis, looking beyond the immediate cause.
But, counsel, the trouble here is that you're arguing a linear argument, which is to say, okay, it closes because of COVID. COVID is a disease that we clearly understood and lasted for this length of time, but that's not how it went. And it was unclear what the threat of the disease was, so that there was different business interruptions. So it wasn't linear. I mean, it's not embezzlement. We're supposed to look at context and facts, not the first cause, according to the case law. So.
Correct. Well, so that is the common thread among Minnesota cases. What's important is the facts and the law and the policy language. I think we all agree on that. Well, what this policy language says, you do have to look at the cause. There's no need to look at a judicially created test. We're not advocating for a cause test. that other courts have had to use because the language didn't identify what to look at. Here, the language says you look at the cause, the common cause.
You look by an order. Mm-hmm. That's what the language says. So if we're looking at, like, it seems to me, if you're putting us to the language of the policy, it's saying caused by an order. And so if, as opposed to applying the cause test, which I think if it applies the cause test, maybe you get beyond the language of the policy and look at the original cause. So I'm trying, you know, so I don't know that helps you.
Respectfully, no, Your Honor. We don't need to go to a cause test because it's not just the ICD provision that you're looking at that determines number of occurrences, it's also the occurrence definition. And the occurrence definition says all loss attributable directly or indirectly to one cause. So the cause analysis comes out of the occurrence definition, not a cause test, not something from case law.
But why wouldn't we read the policy consistently such that, like, the word cause, and especially if the endorsement, correct me if I'm wrong on this, the endorsement is kind of added onto the main policy that has the occurrence language, right?
Correct.
So then once the endorsement comes on and uses the word caused by,
yes,
why wouldn't the parties have intended that to have the same meaning as cause in the occurrence definition?
They don't intend a different meaning, but that's not the only thing the endorsement says. It says what caused the government order? Due to the threat of the spread of communicable disease. That element has to be there too. Lifetime's argument depends on ignoring that part of the ICD provision. They want the court to pretend that they can get coverage by saying, well, our business activity was suspended by a government order, therefore every government order was a separate occurrence. But they can't get coverage by ignoring what caused the government orders. They have to demonstrate the government orders were caused by the threat of the spread of communicable disease.
Ignoring the word order, because it used to be reading the policy to say the policy doesn't say if the suspension is caused by communicable diseases.
No, I'm not ignoring the word order. They have to demonstrate.
There has to be an order. And yes, the order has to have an underlying cause,
correct,
but it's the order that triggers
exactly
the loss.
Yes, exactly right. And that's how we have characterized the requirement of an order as a trigger. It's something that has to be demonstrated to activate the coverage, but it itself has to have a covered cause.
So don't you need to get to the series or similar clause?
We don't need to, Your Honor, but if we do, it's clear. All of these orders are a series of similar or related causes. There's no question, and that's also, American Commerce is all about series of related acts. The Supreme Court said that's not ambiguous. And it granted, it reversed and held there were two occurrences as a matter of law. At a minimum, here we have a series of related causes. All of the government orders are at least similar and certainly related. They have the same, in fact, they have the same cause. They have the same single cause, the threat of the spread of communicable disease. Under the language, under the law, and under the facts, this is one occurrence.
Can I ask you, I honestly just might be in my head not reading. Do you have the language of the ICD in front of you?
I do, Your Honor.
This is maybe just a grammar question. I want to understand. I make sure I'm totally understanding that clause, because there's a phrase. It's that maybe I'm just not understanding grammatically. It's saying if this, and I'm going to take you to the second line. If the suspension is caused by, you see that?
Yes, I see that.
Okay. If the suspension is caused by an order of an authorized governmental agency enforcing any law or ordinance regulating communicable diseases, then it says, and that such portions. What is the and that referring to? Is this saying that the order has to be from an order that is from an authorized agency and that portions of the location are declared? I'm just having trouble understanding... misreading.
I think the most natural and plain reading of the language, yeah, Your Honor, is to establish exactly what the district court said is the confluence of the elements of coverage. There has to be, we agree, suspension of business activity, cessation of business activity, caused by an order of a governmental authority regulating communicable diseases, prohibiting access to the location due to the threat of the spread of communicable disease. I believe that is the necessary reading of this sentence. It may
so
not be the most.
So this is just saying that the suspension is caused by an order, and the order says such portions or something like that. That's part of the order. I'm just trying to understand if that's part of the order or is that a separate somehow?
Yes.
Everybody
that is
agree that it's describing it as a necessary part of the order. Okay.
Yes.
Sorry, I don't mean to nail down in the grammar, but I just wanted to make sure there wasn't some meaning to the that I was missing between.
I don't believe so. Yes, yeah, so the order has to declare portions uninhabitable due to the spread of communicable disease.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
The order of the district court should be affirmed.
Thank you. Mr. Freeman, can I just, before you jump in anything, do you agree with that same reading of that clause?
I'm not sure it's drafted the best, but I think it is describing the content of the order.
Okay.
And I would add that the entire subject of this endorsement is government orders. In the first paragraph, the losses have to be result from a suspension caused by order. The second paragraph, if there's restoration or remediation costs, you have to satisfy the government pursuant to that order. And the third paragraph, too, it's all about government orders.
Can you tell us why, if the order is the cause, which seems to be what it plainly says, why don't all of these orders based on COVID shutting down the clubs constitute a series of similar or related causes?
So, again, I go back to be in a series, they have to be of the same kind or class in temporal or spatial succession. That's the dictionary definition of series. Zurich hasn't disputed that definition, and they didn't provide one in the policy. Jurisdictionally independent orders are not of the same class. I go back to my basketball example. They're different series. They're jurisdictionally independent.
So under that theory, each state's order would be, you know, a claim for a million. But then if we had, you know, within Minnesota, multiple orders, it's just still one claim.
Still one, yes. Our position is that when
You want one claim per state.
Yes, and that, yes.
And also the other orders.
And I think if there's a second closure, there's a second, in our view, there's a second occurrence. But at a minimum, there's one per jurisdiction per state, absolutely.
Wouldn't the second closure order be part of the series? I mean, if it's the jurisdictional basis and Minnesota issued two orders, aren't those two orders similar or related?
My view is the definition of occurrence is focused on losses, and you have two separate losses under the ICD endorsement because you have 2 second consecutive day.
And I agree with you, but it says all loss that is attributable. So wouldn't that encompass what you're describing? You know, we have a loss from the first closure. We have a loss from the second closure. Aren't those losses?
I guess my
one loss because they result from a series of similar orders?
My view is they're not in succession at that point. There's an interruption in the succession, right? If you have, and to link this discussion to American commerce and micro distinguishing. In this case, would be to say each order, even when it's renewed 2 weeks, a month, you know, it's renewed, each one of those is a separate occurrence. That's not our position. It's that each series in succession is a separate occurrence. I think when you have a 3 to 4 month gap because the public health situation has changed, based on the judgments of the governor, then you have a separate occurrence. But that's our view, and it's argued in the briefs, and I think it's a reasonable interpretation of the policy. I want to make...
What do you make of... one really quick question just on that point. In dental experts, which is the case that you rely on, didn't they do it per jurisdiction, not per multiple orders or shutdowns?
So in dental experts, they... the court, I think similar to American Commerce, said to hold each order that was renewed within the same jurisdiction, that would be micro-distinguishing. They didn't use that. That was the gist of it, of the opinion. I don't think dental experts had a second closure fact pattern to it, so I don't think the court had to deal with that.
What do you make of the language in the occurrence definition that says loss is attributable directly or indirectly to one cause? So why is that, and does that take us out of the even the proximate cause world and put us into like a but-for cause world?
Well, so our view first and foremost is that this is a general definition of occurrence and that we need to harmonize the two provisions together and that the ICD endorsement tells us the cause that matters and it's governmental orders. Zurich and the district court said, well, but there's the threat of the spread of COVID, and we think that's an additional cause. But under the language of the definition of occurrence, it is certainly not the one cause of lifetime's loss, because the ICD endorsement itself says that government orders were a cause. And this is true. We had COVID leading up to March 16th, 17th, 18th, when all these orders were issued. And we have COVID now. We had it after each state allowed lifetime to reopen, and we did not get coverage. There's measles floating around now. We don't get coverage unless what? There's an interruption. That's the title of the coverage, and it's caused by government order. So that's what we have to focus on. And if we're in an indirect, if we're considering the threat of the spread of COVID, so my point is, then we're in the multiple causes part of the definition. And you have to have a series, and we don't have a series here. I would end by just, again, bringing the court back to the ambiguity rule. All Lifetime has to prove on this de novo appeal is that Lifetime's position and interpretation of the policy is reasonable. We submit it is absolutely reasonable, as evidenced by our reading of the policy, as evidenced by American Commerce and the factors, and as evidenced by the fact we have a federal district court decision interpreting the similar policy language just like we do. We'd ask the court to reverse. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for your arguments and your briefing. The matter is submitted. You'll have a decision within 90 days. That concludes the court's oral calendar.
All rise.